Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. And yes, folks, that was an especially energetic intro for our boy Nick Gable over in the YouTube comment section. Rex, the fall series continues this week. 4 weeks left. The PGA Tour's fall swing. How's it going today?
It's going very well, Nick. I've never felt more seen. I don't know why Lav wants to lean into this. I don't know why he wants to yell. Actually, we just got good news this morning for those fans of the podcast that don't like the audio from time to time. I think we're heading in the right direction when it comes to that front. So we're looking forward to improving the product as best we can. And we're getting closer to that time in the fall that I start to lock in a little bit, because I wanted to on today's roundtable on golf today. We never got to it, of course not, because Eamon's steering the ship and this is way too mundane golf stuff for him. But I wanted to get into the idea of give me some players you're keeping your eye on that really have to do something in the fall, either to just to keep their job, finish inside that top 100. Maybe they're trying to get into that 51 to 60 category, trying to get into those first two signature events. Give me someone that's playing for something, even outside the top 125. There'll be some starts for those guys as well. We're getting to that point where some names are sticking out. There's some storylines that are coming to fruition, and I'm looking forward to getting to the RSM.
We still have some weeks left for those, right?
Four weeks. Like it's early late.
We're gonna get into it in a couple of weeks' time. I do still think there's other players, but like this week in Utah, for instance, we have Maverick McNealy. He's the highest ranked player in the field, trying to make sure that he's in fine form, looking for a breakout season in 2026. So looking for his first cup team. He was passed over for a spot on this year's U.S. Ryder Cup team. Billy Horschel, sort of on the mend from recent hip surgery. Tough break for him, a player who was playing arguably the best golf of his career, going under the knife, now trying to get back a couple of so-so finishes, first in Japan, as well as the BMW PGA Championship. But yeah, there's going to be plenty of time for that. We're going to be doing a live show, you and I, from the RSM, the fall series finale on Sea Island about a month's time from now. Very excited for that. Are there players, though, Rex, that you are particularly keen on keeping a track of, if not this week, then over these next 4 weeks?
A couple. I think Joel Damon is going to be on top of everyone's list. He's the easy pick simply because he was in this exact same situation last year. I remember at Sea Island covering that event, him making the cut. I've never seen so much emotion from a player just making the cut, him doing enough on Sunday, just enough on Sunday to essentially keep his tour card. So that one's always good just because there aren't any unfiltered moments when it comes to Joel Damon. It's why he's such a fan favorite, such a media favorite. But there's plenty of other guys down the list. Alex Noren stands out to me. He's 111th on the list right now. When you and I spoke about it this morning, you pointed out correctly. He's going to finish inside that top 10 category in the DP World Tour. So this isn't necessarily really about his job. Also, keep in mind, he missed a good portion of this season, so he would have some sort of status on a medical issue because of a hip issue he was dealing with. But when I spoke with him at the Ryder Cup, he was one of Luke Donald's brilliant vice captains. And I sort of just in passing asked, are you going to play any in the fall? His response to me shocked me a little bit. He said, I'm playing everything in the fall. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And there was some European tour starts that most European tour players that play both the PGA Tour and across the pond, they use this time of year to essentially get their minimums, try to make sure their numbers are good so they can maintain that status. You have the postseason coming up for the DP World Tour as well. But he pointed out he really wants to try to get inside that top 51 to 60, which essentially gets you into those first two signature events next year. He has seen it now. There is a body of work. We know what it means to be on the outside of that number and to be on the inside of that number. Now, he does have a bit of a get out of jail free card early in the season because he's right now inside the top 30 in the world ranking. So that would give him access. But I think every little bit when it comes to a player like Alex Noren, who plays a lot, he's going to play a lot. And I mean, he hits a lot, I guess would be the way you would put it. Like, you just want to go out and give yourself as many opportunities as possible. And if you can do that in the signature events. So I think there's plenty of compelling storylines. I'm with you. It can probably wait until we get to Sea Island, but this is when you start paying attention.
Yeah, there's certainly something for everybody, whether it's trying to get to the signature events at 51 through 60, whether it's trying to keep your job with the top 100, whether it's guys like Billy Horschel who are on the mend, whether it's guys like Max Homa, who does not have to worry about his PGA Tour status, but is just trying to find something. And Max Homa, I believe, a pair of top 20 finishes so far in the fall, trying to keep that momentum going. You look at the guys, if you finish 101 to 125, they are going to have conditional status on the PGA Tour for 2026. But that's not quite as cushy of a spot as it has been in recent years. Keep in mind that the field sizes are going to be trimmed. The maximum is going to be 144. You do have fewer Korn Ferry Tour graduates. Those players, particularly those on Korn Ferry Tour or the DP World Tour coming over, Q School grads, those are the guys who are actually now going to feel like they actually have a PGA Tour card. That was one of the main moves from trimming the number of fully exempt players from 125 to 100 to make sure that a PGA Tour card actually means something. And so you might say, oh, you got conditional stats. You're still going to get your 15 starts. You're still going to have an adequate opportunity to keep your playing status for the following year. I think that is sort of an open question as we sit here in late October, what that actually is going to get you. And if you're only getting, let's say, a half dozen starts on the PGA Tour, all of a sudden you're piecemealing a schedule with the Korn Ferry Tour and it gets messy pretty quickly. I do think it is. Oh, sorry, sausage fingers up. Please do go ahead.
Well, this came up when I was at the Pro Corps Championship earlier in the fall, and the idea that I think there's a confidence level that at least that 101 to 125 number will get something close to what you're used to seeing out of conditional status. Keep in mind, that's two separate categories starting next year. So they're doing it a little bit different. I think it's 101 to 111 is one category, and then 111 to 125 is another category. That's getting really into the weeds, but it basically gives you an idea of who's going to get in. So if you finish 101, I think you have a pretty good chance of getting in. You're not going to get in 25 events, but certainly 15, 20 is enough to make a card, to keep your card going into next year. The other guy that stands out to me that would fall into this category, and it's an interesting case study to me, is Sam Ryder has kept his tour card for 8 consecutive seasons, I believe. And he has finished every single year between 101 and 125. And it's such a fascinating place to live right now, because for the vast majority of what I think by any accounts, if you're looking at it from the outside in, pretty good career. I mean, he's done well for himself. Now that line that you drew is you're no longer successful. And it gives you an idea of what players are having to deal with this time around versus everything else that came before this.
Sam Ryder, part of Longwood, Florida, also the hometown of Rex Hoggard. You do love to see it. I do think this is a perfect segue, Rex. Something that came out a couple of days ago via a PGA Tour release. That is a new event in fall 2026, the Good Championship. Going to get 500 FedEx Cup points. It's going to be played in November. We're heading back to Austin, which was obviously the longtime host of a WGC match play, which you and I visited quite often, an event that we love, an event that we miss. What's your read on this situation? Because all we hear from Brian Rollup, the new CEO of the PGA Tour, is scarcity. And when you think of scarcity, you think of the number of tournaments and you think of the number of players. And so why all of a sudden are we starting new events in the fall? Friend of the program, Josh Carpenter of Sports Business Journal, reported that the tour is also looking at a new event in Asheville, North Carolina. What's your read on this? Why are we expanding the fall rather than shrinking the fall?
Well, first and foremost, you can meet me on camera one on this one. The idea that you would equate a good event being played, even in Austin, which is weird, they like being weird, that you would equate that to what happened at Bethpage. I'm not quite sure where Eamon Lynch was going with that question today on Golf Today.
I don't know either. I do think there is a tendency among the olds, and I would count you among them, is basically to look at like good, no laying up, fried egg, bar stool, Bob Does Sports, all of those as just like one influencer YouTuber type group, rather than differentiating them for what they are, what their purpose is, and what they actually do. Again, I don't really frequent traffic in the good videos, but from what I can tell, they are largely inoffensive, and that they essentially just have golf rounds and golf challenges, and they film each other doing so. These are not the antagonistic, boozed up, hardcore aggro bros who are causing disruptions at Bethpage. Might this be leaking into recreational golf, and all of a sudden you have people like me filming their buddies and taking 5 and 6 hour rounds? So really, I think you could make a case that might have an effect on there. But like the bro culture and the gambling culture and, you know, taunting players, like that is not good's demographic. That is not why they have 2 million YouTube subscribers. It's entirely different. And I think it's wrong to lump all of the influencer types together.
I think he would have answered that question better than I did then when Eamon asked me, because I had nowhere to go with that. Because as you're right, a man of a certain age, I don't have a lot of interest in good, or much of what the other influencers do. I'm not saying it's bad. I've had this conversation. I believe I've thrown our colleague Todd Lewis under the bus on numerous times. But he wears it. And I remember 2 years ago at the Tour Championship when they started the Influencer Classic on the Wednesday before. And he was kind of grousing about it. And finally, I had to stop him. I'm like, hey, man, it's not for you. It's not for me. It's not for men of a certain age or people of a certain age. It's for my kids. And you talk about my middle son all the time. Trevor, he texted me during one of those influencers. Like, go get Fat Perez's autograph. He's never texted me for anyone else's autograph in golf. Tiger Woods, Scottie Scheffler, you name it. Has never
Jack
won.
Jack Nicklaus.
Nobody. No interest whatsoever. So I get the dynamic, but you touched on the one part that I do find fascinating here, because you're right. If you go back to what Brian Rolapp said when they created the Future Competitions Committee, the second key characteristic, which is what he called it, the first was parity, but the second key characteristic that he wants this committee to look into, which includes Tiger Woods, is scarcity. And it's really easy, or it was at least in the moment, to point to the fall and the events in the fall and be like, yep, that's probably where we're going to start seeing some cuts. Because you could make a really good argument that what happens after the Tour Championship, going head-to-head with football, both professional and semi-professional at the college level, you're never going to have a chance. So why not just give that up and move on? I have pivoted on this to a certain degree. You and I have had this sort of argument in the past where I understand where you're coming from. I'm a baseball fan. I look forward to spring training because it's pretty much the only time the Orioles ever seem to have a chance these days. However, I also never understood what you were trying to argue. What if I'm a business, why would I give up business? If the RSMs and the Worldwide Technologies and the Procores of the world want to pay me money to have events in the fall that they know and I know and everyone else knows are not going to have nearly the level of interest that you would have in the summer during the regular PGA Tour schedule, if they're still willing to pay me and invest in this product, why would I turn them away? I'm no longer of that mindset because Brian Rolapp is clearly going in another direction. And this makes no sense to me. This is a quote unquote multi-year agreement that they have with Good. Didn't give a number, but to give you an idea, as of right now, the RSM Classic is sponsored through 2028. Worldwide Technology, 2027. Procore, 2027. Bermuda Tourism Board just re-upped just last week, I believe, for a multi-year extension. The only event in the fall that seems in danger right now is the Mississippi event. They lost their title sponsor and the search is ongoing. I could see that one going away. But you have the same number of fall events now as you had in 2013 when they first went to the wraparound schedule. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused as well. You bring up the multi-year agreements, the other contracts that extend through 2028, 2021. I'm sure and I know that there are commissioner clauses in some of those tournament contracts where at the drop of a hat, if the commissioner or the CEO in this case wants to end that agreement for the sake of the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour product, he can do so at his own discretion. I've talked a number of times, both on Golf Today and on this podcast, what I believe the PGA Tour should do in the fall. And it seems, at least through in 2026, that is going to be at least beefing up the fall schedule. Now, keep in mind, the PGA Tour fall, the 2026 schedule was already well underway for the planning when Brian Rolapp took this job. And so the schedule that he sees for 2026 is the schedule that was already made for him. There's not much he can do with that. The focus for the PGA Tour is 2027 and beyond. I'm still a little bit confused. I think they should go international in nature in the fall. I've talked about that repeatedly. Maybe these fall events essentially become some sort of Korn Ferry Tour Plus. But again, if Brian Rolapp is worried about scarcity, and that is one of his key principles, is making sure the PGA Tour brought... Yes, I'm not sure they're actually like numbered in terms of importance, but yes, it is one of the principles.
First was parity, second was scarcity.
Yes. What was third again? Third was...
I have to look.
I don't know.
Not sure about that one.
I get excited about the principles. Number two is scarcity, and why that is so important is because the market value and the media rights possibilities of a stronger condensed schedule is higher than one that spreads out over 10 or 11 a month, particularly when you get the audience that you have for these fall events. I'm a little bit confused by it, but I do think the larger point here as it relates to Good is this should be welcomed. This should be an inclusive environment. You look at what the PGA Tour is doing. It is very obvious over the past couple of years, whether it's turning to Netflix with the Full Swing series to give younger fans an inside look at who these PGA Tour players are and what their family life is like, what it's like inside the ropes, what it's like for them on a day-to-day basis. I think all of that has been a net positive. You look at what they're doing, what you mentioned with the Creator Classics leading into some of the signature events on the PGA Tour. Those are the most high-profile, toughest conditions that PGA Tour players face week in and week out. By comparison, you can see what the YouTubers are shooting on that golf course and what PGA Tour players are shooting on those golf courses. The contrast alone, I think, even heightens the PGA Tour players in terms of stature. And now you look at the collaboration with Good Good, among other entities. I just argued on Golf Today, there are two ways to expand the reach if you are the PGA Tour. One is to go more global in nature, as we talked about potential in the fall. And second is to tap in to this younger audience. If having a PGA Tour event, and again, we're talking about a fall event that's probably going to have a purse of $6 or $7 million. If you're talking about bringing in Good Good for a PGA Tour sponsorship, if that can help tap into a younger audience, it is a no-brainer for the PGA Tour, and good on them for actually doing it. One other bit of news, Rex, that came out over the past couple of days, and this, you really had to scour the internet for this one, but this was from a media day for the Travelers Championship, which, yes, Keegan Bradley did win the Travelers Championship. Not sure why they're having a media day. What is this, 6 months after the tournament? No, less than that, 4 months after the tournament. But regardless, Keegan Bradley, in what is his first public appearance since the loss to the Europeans in late September at Bethpage Black, said this about the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy. Really? Quote, "You win, it's glory for a lifetime. You lose, it's going to have to sit with me for the rest of his life. There's no part of me that thinks I'll ever get over this." He said this continually. "This effing event has been so brutal to me. I don't know if I want to play." Quickly corrected himself. "No, I do. It's such a weird thing to love something so much that just doesn't give you anything." Is Keegan Bradley taking this too hard? Is this what you expected? Is this, as our resident conspiracy theorist Eamon Lynch posited, just drumming up interest for what is sure to be another episode on Full Swing to drop in early 2026? What do you think?
Maybe. I'm with you. When he was asked about it, and the idea, it'd be a really good episode. I will tune in. I'll watch it. I would be curious.
I can't wait.
No, I think everything that comes out of Keegan at this point, and even before we got to this point, was genuine when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Is the emotion, this is not manufactured. This isn't for the sake of trying to drum up interest in a show on Netflix or anything else. He is tortured when it comes to this event. He was tortured going into this event. He was put in the impossible position of, you should be playing. Like, you and I have disagreed a little bit on this, but you can make a really good argument. He was one of the top 12 Americans heading into Bethpage, and he made the right choice. He made, in my mind, was the only choice. If you're ever going to captain, this was going to be your opportunity. And he knew, he talked about it at this press conference this week as well, the idea that I couldn't do both. He could not captain and play. I think that everyone's come around to that idea. And he actually added credence to the idea, saying that I was exhausted on Friday night. I can't imagine what it would have possibly been like trying to sit down in my hotel room with the vice captains, trying to figure out what the game plan was for Saturday to try to turn this thing around. You have to have sympathy for this man, or empathy, because no one's ever been through it before because of the situation he was put in. I think it's all genuine, and I don't think he ever fully recovers from this. This said, I had a chance at the Ryder Cup to walk down some fairways with Corey Pavin and Tom Lehman. And here are two captains that also took really bad losses. Both of those were overseas, a little bit different, but they also took really bad losses. They've moved on. Their lives continue. I think as Keegan gets further and further away from Bethpage, it won't be at the front of mind. Right now, it's still very fresh. He's still reading headlines. And you brought up on the Golf Today hit, and I wanted to try to correct you. Davis Love actually won a Ryder Cup at home after he lost a Ryder Cup at home. So that's the unique position when it comes to Davis, where he has seen it from both sides. And I have sat down and had long conversations with Davis about do you hate losing more than you love winning? And he sort of acknowledged that, yes, in that situation, it's so much worse to lose than you, whatever it is you gain from winning.
The comp I was trying to make is that Davis Love had a team, the Americans in 2012, that was favored at home, had all of the built-in advantages, and he squandered what was, at the time, a record-tying advantage heading in to Sunday singles. Like, I'd be very curious to know, does Davis Love think about that every day? Does Davis Love think about that every month?
No, and certainly, not every day.
And certainly the winning 4 years later at Hazeltine is helpful for that and helping solve some of what ails him. But the sting of losing a home Ryder Cup in the fashion that they did is going to stick with him. I'm with you. It certainly hurts right now for Keegan Bradley. I do certainly think this is genuine. This is not some sort of, you know, attempt at image building or trying to garner sympathy to, you know, to have fans be kinder to him when he returns to the PGA Tour in 2026. I do not think that is the case at all. To me, it just sort of underscores what is the modern Ryder Cup, where if you win, you are feted like a king. Look at Luke Donald. He could do no wrong. They might run him back in 2027. He would certainly be a prohibitive favorite. At that time, he's talked about, along with Tony Jacklin, as the greatest Ryder Cup captains ever, like, all well-deserved. And if you lose, particularly if you lose at home, then you did some moronic things. You made some mistakes. You don't deserve another chance. You should be nowhere near another Ryder Cup. I don't necessarily believe that that is the case either. And I certainly think Keegan deserves some sort of empathy / sympathy, because, again, he didn't ask for this. He was a backup captain who had no experience. Any other captain, any other U.S. captain probably puts him on that team. And now he's going to be 41 years old when the next Ryder Cup play is played at Adair Manor in 2027. Hard not to feel for him in this case. All right, Rex, before we get out. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think Damon Hack sent out an email. We were kind of going over some ideas for the Golf Today hit today. And he said, let's go over the pros and cons of Keegan Bradley being captain again. And I couldn't think of any pros. And I'm not trying to completely dump all over Keegan Bradley. As I made it perfectly clear, he was putting him in an impossible position and poured his heart and soul into the job. But you can't give me any pros other than, well, yeah, maybe I'll give it one more chance trying to win an overseas Ryder Cup, which no one has done since 1994 on the U.S. side. So I don't know the pros internally for him. Do I really want to spend two more years doing this and getting kicked around and then probably ended up in the exact same position on Sunday night trying to explain a loss? I don't know that there was anything he particularly did over the last 2 years that would lead you to believe that, yep, he just got unlucky. Give him another chance. He can win again. I don't see there's plenty of cons. I don't see any pros. I'd much rather him be a player on that team than a captain.
I could think of pros, but they would be pretty muted. Whereas, and I mentioned the interview I did with Paul McGinley on this podcast about a month and a half or so ago, and he was adamant that the consistency and the continuity of reinstalling a captain, giving him a 4-year term instead of a 2-year term, and just sort of rolling over and trying something else new, was imperative, particularly for an away Ryder Cup. Now, you can make the argument that Keegan Bradley made some catastrophic errors. Clearly, the setup of the golf course was a catastrophic error. Certainly, some of the pairings were catastrophic errors, particularly when you think of the Harris English, Colin Morikawa, which the data said was quite literally the worst possible pairing that you could possibly have. But is that all on Keegan Bradley? Keegan Bradley's not running the numbers. Keegan Bradley's not, you know, pouring over golf course data and making a final decision. He has a team around him helping inform his decisions.
By all accounts, he didn't do the numbers, but he's the one that listened to scouts, who is their statistical arm.
Certainly, came up with
the scenario that those two should be together. And I don't even argue against that particular pairing. It's doubling down on Saturday that really got me with that particular pairing. But there's plenty of reasons that, no, he didn't have to listen to the scouts USA. He did, though.
He did. But it's not a unilateral decision. You know, these are group decisions. This is not Keegan Bradley dictator saying this is how it is going to go. He has assistant captains, he has vice captains, he has a sports staff, he has a data analytics team.
You think someone talked him into those things?
I don't know. I don't know, but I do know that U.S. Ryder Cup captaincies are not dictatorships, and not Keegan Bradley saying this is how it should go. If you remember back to his press conference as a losing Ryder Cup team, keep in mind, he said that went against his instincts, having the setup the way it did, but he still went with it. I don't know if it's peer pressure or whatever, but if he could put a better team around him, who knows? It could be a little bit different. So in other words, the continuity, the consistency, in theory, you learn from your mistakes. You know, in theory, there is some adaptability. In theory, you would have a longer runway of time for planning. In theory, you could adopt a couple of the things that Paul McGinley was adamant about, if not just reinstalling the captains, but also tweaking the qualifying criteria, and more heavily weighting for the top players, trying to limit the number of rookies or first-timers who could potentially make the team, knowing how difficult it is for first-timers and rookies to play in Road Rider Cups, implementing a scouting trip a week or so ahead of time, just as the Europeans did, very successfully taking that two-day scouting trip to Bethpage. Like, these are all things that conceivably you could see Team USA running it back and trying to do, even in what was a losing effort. Now, that would involve a couple of things, wouldn't it, Rex? I think it would involve certainly a different data team, a different support team for Keegan Bradley. But I think most importantly, it would have to involve buy-in from Keegan Bradley, who called the aftermath of this one of the most difficult times of his career. He certainly endured a difficult captaincy in 2025, managing his playing responsibilities as well as the captainship. And so if you could somehow get buy-in from Keegan Bradley to want to do it again, which I don't know that he necessarily does.
If you
listen to him, it doesn't sound like he's in any position to want to do it right now, but who knows? When this decision is likely made in January, February, first quarter of 2026, maybe he feels differently. Maybe he's more motivated. Maybe he's angered. Maybe he wants another shot at redemption. Right now, it's hard to see it, but I do think there is potentially a path forward for Keegan Bradley if he wants it.
This effing event. That's his words, not mine. This effing event. Does that sound...
He's tortured.
The definition of unrequited love. Like, why would you do this? And let's keep in mind, this is not a beloved coach of your college football program, which if it hasn't been fired, he's probably going to be fired based on the landscape right now in the NCAA. This isn't one of your coaches getting fired, where of course someone wants the job at Florida after Billy Napier got fired, because it's a high profile program and you get paid a lot of money. Even if you're Billy Napier and you get let go, they continue to keep paying you money. That's not the case for the captain of the Ryder Cup teams. They're not paid. He's doing this pro bono work and he's torturing himself. He's dedicating his life to it. And he probably hurt his career to some degree in the long term because of the energy he had to put into this. Now, I want him part of the process. I'm not sitting here saying that Keegan Bradley doesn't have something he can bring to the table. And my guess is there have been multiple meetings between he and the PGA of America and the committee looking ahead. Who's next? What can we do different? Let's try to continue to refine this and fix this chip. Of course, he's going to be involved in that. But I think there's only really one outlier when it comes to, I don't think he should do it again. I don't think he should be asked to do it again. But if it comes down to one person's decision, it's Tiger. Tiger Woods is going to be the captain in 2 years if he wants that job. Everything points to it and makes total sense.
Again, we have no proof that Tiger Woods would be a really good U.S. Ryder Cup captain.
I mean, you're right.
We can think that he would be because of his tactical nature, because of his strategy. Keep in mind, he was a playing captain of the 2019 U.S. President's Cup team, a team that had lost only once in that competition. They had to stage a final day rally, fueled, of course, by Tiger Woods himself as a player. Otherwise, that could have been an embarrassing loss as well. I do think there is at least the storybook potential for closure. Here's a player, Keegan Bradley, who was part of that 2012 collapse. He memorably sat out, remember, on that Saturday afternoon with Phil Mickelson, despite being red hot. Flash forward to 2014. He was the player who lost his match, which ended up being the winning point for the Europeans. And now he is the losing Ryder Cup captain, the first time the U.S. has lost on home soil since 2012. So maybe right now he's stinging. Right now he's hurting. I'd be very curious to see how he feels in early 2026. Is all of a sudden he hellbent on revenge? If Tiger Woods doesn't want it, I think you could do worse than bringing back Keegan Bradley. He certainly seems to have the respect and appreciation of the players on the team, which again, for these sort of competitions, is half the battle.
I don't know the upside for either Keegan or the PGA of America.
Probably true, but there's all downside. Europe is going to be heavy favorites. They're probably going to have a better roster. They're going to be on home soil.
Probably be U.S. again.
Like, the U.S. hasn't won on foreign soil since 1993.
Oh, three.
And so it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. Something tells me, Rex, this is not the last time we're going to touch on this topic. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, golfchannel.com has relaunched. It's back. It's beautiful. And it's glorious. Make sure to check out all of our content there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys next week.
See me, Nick.